This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In 1967, the southeastern portion of Nigeria seceded as the Republic of Biafra, triggering a civil war that threatened to tear the young Nigerian nation apart. Nnamdi Kanu, who is the director of Radio Biafra in London, joins me in the studio today to discuss the legacy of that three-year-long civil war and why the desire of Biafrans to secede persists to this day. Nnamdi, you are the leader of the Indigenous People of Biafra. Could you explain that title?
Yes, because we are a people who are original occupiers of that very place. We've been there for thousands of years, over 5,000 years. We've been there before the British came, and I'm sure also the British came to Malaysia as well. When they came to where we are predominantly God-fearing people, and they mixed all different cultures and ways of life together, and that gave rise to Nigeria. Nigeria is only but 100 years old. We've been existing for nearly 5,000 years.
And you're the leader of the Indigenous People of Biafra.
That's correct.
Is this a group?
It is. It's a country, more or less. These are people because we've not been allowed by the British ostensibly and a few other people to have our own nation. So we are Indigenous People of Biafra by virtue of the 2005 United Nations Charter on the Rights of Indigenous People. We coined that very phrase to describe who we are, that we are separate from Nigeria. We are not Nigerians. We may carry Nigerian passports because necessity warrants us to carry it, but we are not Nigerians. And that's one thing we want to make very clear to the Malaysian people and Malaysian government, especially not to see us as Nigerians, because we are not. We are Biafrans.
And currently then, are most of the Indigenous people of Biafra still occupying that particular space?
Yes, we are still occupying this space, but more and more, as you can see, even in your own country, we are being dispersed all over the world by forced, or should I say, imposed economic restrictions. We are not allowed to go into certain sectors of the economy to be able to operate. We are not allowed to, although there's a seaport less than 80 kilometers from where we come from, we are not allowed to use those seaports to import vehicles or to conduct any form of business whatsoever. So that is the problem. I mean, where we come from, we have to travel nearly 400 or 500 miles to go and access seaport. The problem is that there is a deliberate depopulation of where we come from, and that is what we're trying to resist.
Nigeria was formed in 1960, as you mentioned, very young.
It's very young, yes.
Yes, by the British, who united three major tribal regions that are culturally and ethnically very distinct. In your mind, was the civil war inevitable?
Inevitable, and so will other ones that will come. Right now, as you well know, there's a form of civil war also going on with the Boko Haram sect trying to establish legitimately, I would say, Sharia law where they come from. They have every right to do that. And what the difficulty is, and most people fail to grasp, is that the differences that you've alluded to are irreconcilable. Irreconcilable differences. It's just like asking somebody from Afghanistan to go and live in Surrey in England. It's not possible. The ways of life are different.
And so what are the ways of life of Biafrans?
Ways of life of Biafrans is that we have one God. We worship God in heaven, Chukwa Biama. We are also very tolerant, very, very liberal. We believe in asylum. We don't hurt or harm people who come into where we come from. I cannot recall all through my life having an incident of racism, for instance, where foreigners come into where we come from and for some reason we go and attack them. We are very open. We are Republicans. We are we are wholesomely Republicans. We believe in freedom of speech, but that is not the case with the other people as well. In the northern part, that is the Mohammedan Emirates of the North, they are predominantly feudal. They have emirs, they have the shehus, they have sultans. Where we come from, there is no such thing. We don't have them. In the West, they have the obas. Where we come from, there is no such thing. I mean, can you imagine, amalgamating Saudi Arabia and United States side by side in the same country? It would never work. That's exactly what's happening to us.
So it was a three-year civil war. What have been the legacies of that war since?
It's been the continued, I will not use the word, is the systematic attempt to eradicate the Biafran people as a race. Systematic and wholesome. That is where we are in your country, for instance. Even in your country, that persecution have continued. Because you have here, when Biafrans are arrested, for instance, the Nigeria High Commission here, or the embassy, whatever they call it, fails to come to their aid or to explain. And that have been the ongoing problem we're having here, which also this gives a medium to actually say to the Malaysian people, the Malaysian government and authorities, that Biafrans are more or less stateless at the moment. They are domiciled here in your country. If anyone commits a crime, by all means, punish them. But if they have not committed any crime, please do try to be very lenient, because as soon as we get our Biafra, we'll come and take all of them home.
So what... you mentioned the statelessness of Biafrans, which is obviously a cause for concern. I mean, there are, I suppose, citizens of other countries come to mind as well, who are more or less, for all intents and purposes, stateless. So is that sort of the current aim of, the indigenous people of Biafra, to reclaim a home?
Yes, we wish to reclaim our home because we were a people before a man called Frederick Lugard came. The man who was actually responsible for the hiatus between Hong Kong and China. When he came, he subjected us to the worst kind of vicious and barbaric governance ever witnessed by our people. Our ancient ways of life, which, you know, obviously valued tolerance, valued decency, valued freedom of speech, all was thrown through the window. And now the difficulty we are having as a people is to try to convince the world that we are different, that we are not Nigerians. That is something the world needs to appreciate, especially the Malaysian government. We are not Nigerians. We are Biafrans.
Why do you think that's been a line that's been so difficult to draw and to be grasped by outsiders?
Is because of the lack of media exposures. That is why we're very grateful to your station, grateful to yourself and all the rest of the people here that made this very possible for us to educate, to enlighten, to inform the world as to what is going on. We are not part of this very people, and this kind of a media blanket that we have, of course, perpetrated, orchestrated by the BBC, is there for all to see. It's the BBC that is causing it. We know that.
The Republic of Biafra has a very charismatic leader in Colonel Emeka Ojukwu.
Yes.
Tell us about him and how he's viewed in Nigeria today.
He's viewed as a visionary. He was the man that saw tomorrow. His passing away, in fact, reinforced the belief that everybody held at the time that what this very young, vibrant man was saying was indeed correct. He was too radical for the British to accept. That is the problem. The British came to take our oil. That is the essence of the whole problem. The British came for our oil. This colonel said to them, no, we will not give you the oil. The oil belongs to the people. British Petroleum and Shell went away and said, because of that, we will take your oil from you and we will kill your people in the process. Harold Wilson, who was the then British Prime Minister, was a major shareholder in BP. And they proceeded to make sure that we lost 5.2 million people, the second largest genocide in modern history.
Nobel Prize-winning Nigerian writer Wole Soyinka argued that secession was unwise, even though he thought the cause itself was justified. Does Ojukwu have to bear some of the responsibility for that large number of dead Biafrans that you just cited?
No, not at all, because Ojukwu declared Biafra in 1967. The killing of Biafrans started in 1945. That's a long way away. And also for Wole Soyinka, who I thought was a very learned man, to come up with such a thing is quite, quite worrisome, so to speak. Wole Soyinka should know, of all the people in the world, that what unites the people together. I'm sure there was a time that Singapore and Malaysia were in the same country, I believe. And until at a time, they have to go their separate ways. They're good neighbors today, very good friends, cooperating, both are doing very well. Both are piloting in their separate ways, what is quite remarkable and an economic miracle. Now, the ways of life of Biafrans is markedly different. We cannot see eye to eye with Yorubas or with Arawa people, those of the House of Fulani people. I cannot understand if there is any law in nature that gives the British people the right to go and create countries, because only God in heaven can create a country or a nation, not a human being. So I don't know where he's coming from. There are Yoruba people in Ghana, in Togo, in Niger. Are you then telling me that a fellow Yoruba person as a Nobel winner, you know, in other countries are not more closely related to him than myself? I am not Yoruba. I am not Hausa. What? We have nothing in common, nothing whatsoever. We don't even eat the same food. We don't wear the same clothing. We don't believe in the same religion. We don't speak the same language. There is nothing, no commonality whatsoever, apart from English language, of course. That's all. How can we be in the same country? It's impossible.
I'm speaking today to Namdi Kanu, the director of Radio Biafra and leader of the indigenous people of Biafra. We are discussing the legacy of Nigeria's civil war from 1967 to 1970. We'll continue the conversation after this on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, joined today by Namdi Kanu, Director of Radio Biafra and leader of the Indigenous People of Biafra. We are discussing the legacy of Nigeria's civil war, which spanned 1967 to 1970. So we were just discussing Colonel Ojukwu, and
yes,
it was the first televised war, and he was very media savvy in getting the rich Western world to pay attention, but African neighbors rooted against Biafra. Why do you think he failed to garner African support for Biafra?
Because then OAU was a club of very despotic individuals with vested interest. Their interest was not in the development of their respective countries, but rather in the perpetuation of themselves and their dynasties in power forever and ever. That was the problem. And that very short-sightedness is continuing till today, which is why Africa is indeed a very poor place.
You referenced Boko Haram earlier,
yes,
and that is one of the reasons why Nigeria is attracting a lot of international media coverage in the modern day and age. You know, you mentioned that they have legitimate reasons,
yes,
to want to instate Sharia law.
Of course.
However, what about the means by which they're going about that?
Because in Nigeria, the only language, the only thing that the government understands is violence. They are not amenable to reason. Boko Haram or their sponsors or their backers tried to reason with the government of the country. They asked for a separate area. They asked for Sharia law to become part and parcel of their day-to-day existence. That was denied. The secularism of the state was being trumped up all the time as being the panacea, the solution to all the problems. They were Muslims before the British came and will remain Muslims. Therefore, if they have a very unique way of life, a unique culture, you must respect that. It is unique to them. You cannot then ask them to subsume their way of life into a new arrangement, into a new thinking that waters down their core beliefs.
Is religious extremism a growing concern in Nigeria?
It is not a growing concern. There's only extremism coming from one side. Those that think that the only way to get their way is by killing people only. Boko Haram is doing that at the moment.
And so we've mentioned, you know, the idea of unique living, or rather of unique cultures, having to sort of coexist side by side. So should Biafra succeed in seceding from Nigeria, what impact would this have on Nigeria as well as possibly the rest of Africa?
Peace. It will bring peace, tranquility and prosperity. There will be no reason to kill anymore. Right now, what is happening is that trying to shackle people, as you well know, that if you try to restrict people's freedoms, if you try to stop people from doing what comes naturally to them, you force them into doing things that are extremely unnatural. Boko Haram have been forced, I believe, to start killing people because all the other avenues for dialogue and discussion failed. Because Nigeria as a country do not understand dialogue. They do not understand that in politics sometimes you need to adopt a different discourse, and that discourse is to try to amend, to restructure, to change the system to suit the needs of the people.
What role do religion and ethnicity play in Nigerian politics?
Very, very strong. Wole Soyinka, the Nobel laureate, people from his side, the Yorubas, never, ever, ever vote for anybody else. Only Yorubas. They can never vote for anybody else. That is how they've been conditioned. Also, if you are not of a particular breed or sect, there is no way that people can vote for you. If you don't come from my village, why should I vote for you? You don't understand my way of life. Why should I vote for you?
And is there any way of overcoming this? I mean, because I think what you've just described is something that is seen in usually very, very young political systems. That tends to be the way of it. You know,
yeah,
you vote for what you know. You vote for the people who you believe will look out for you. And in some cases, you believe that that's only possible if they are of your people.
Yes.
Is there a way to move past this sort of thinking?
It is not possible. Impossible. Not now, not tomorrow, not ever. the hatred is so deep, the distrust is like a chasm. It cannot be bridged. It is impossible, inconceivable, that one day the various nationalities that comprise of the present zoo you call Nigeria is somehow going to live in peace and harmony. It is impossible. Not now, nor in the future. Impossible.
Are there any, uniting cultural factors in Nigeria at all? Because I think for example, in other countries, what seems to work are things such as sports or music, like that sort of bring everybody together under one umbrella. Is there anything like that?
Yes,
in
there
Nigeria?
Is. One big thing that brings us together, that's corruption, stealing and looting of national treasury. When it comes to stealing and exporting money, they agree on one thing. All the elite, all the ruling criminals, they agree that stealing is a very good thing. That is why Malaysia that came to my part of the world, to Biafra land, to come and learn how to plant palm trees everywhere, is today exporting palm oil to my people. And look at Malaysia. I was here last year. It was good. It's even better this year. Progressing, you can tell. Because here, your politicians, the politicians here in Malaysia, they understand the need to make their country better. Where we come from, what they understand is to impoverish everybody, to bring the money out, even here into Malaysia, to come and buy big, huge condos. So there is a very big difference. Nothing unites us apart from criminality, apart from hopelessness, apart from poverty. Yes, of course, things unite us, but there are all the negative things.
The issue of Biafra quite understandably remains sensitive in Nigeria till this day. How is that event in history being represented in Nigerian school history books?
Not reflected at all. It is not being discussed. There is a deliberate ploy, of course, orchestrated by the British to whitewash the events of that very era away. And they've succeeded in doing that. That is why you have youngsters grow up, unless they are born Biafrans. You have little kids growing up not knowing their history. When they listen to Radio Biafra, that is where people congregate most evenings to understand exactly what happened. And that is why we are very proud of the work that we're doing. But also, we need stations like yours and other media outlets to be able to continue the propagation of this very message, that there was a war, an unjust war that was fought to kill a particular people. When the British came, they found us there as a people. By the time they left, they created something else. If I ask you now, what is the meaning of the word Nigeria? You can tell me. Nigeria means nothing to anybody. It doesn't mean anything in Yoruba language, in Igbo language, in Hausa language. It means nothing. Absolutely nothing. So you cannot come and change my name, change my culture and my way of life, and impoverish me in the process and expect me to be happy with it. No one will be happy.
That's how it's pictured in sort of official history books, in official academic circles. However, the Biafran War has exercised a powerful hold over Nigeria's literary imagination, animating writers such as Chinua Achebe, we mentioned Wole Soyinka, and Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Yes.
Can you still argue then that it's not in the mainstream public consciousness? Is it still something that people don't know about?
People don't know about it because, for instance, the Half of a Yellow Sun movie by the adaptation, the screen adaptation of Chimamanda Adichie's book was banned. The censor board, decided to ban the movie. They wanted some amendments to be made that reference to those who actually carried out the worst atrocities during the war should be omitted from that very book. And if there was some kind of public understanding as to what happened during the war or what led to it, how come someone like Gowon is still walking about free today? These are war criminals cited by international bodies as being responsible for the death of millions of people. In this part of the world, there was Pol Pot. He was tried, they tried to try him. He was condemned. It is only in the war between Biafra and Nigeria that there is no war criminal. How can you kill 5.2 million people and there is no war criminal? So there is that very deliberate and conscious attempt to keep all issues Biafra away from the minds of the young ones growing up.
And you mentioned there how there are, young Biafrans growing up who will be unaware of their own backgrounds.
Yes.
Tell us about your background and how you came to the cause of Biafran autonomy.
It's quite simple. I used to read a lot as a very, very young man. I read many books. I read Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart. I went on to read books like The Animal Farm by George Orwell. In other words, in me, I have always despised discrimination and somebody trying to stamp down on other people for no other reason than the fact that they wish to dominate them. As you are growing up, the injustice, my first cousin had to change his name to something else, to a Hausa Fulani name, to be able to gain admission into a university. You write an entry examination into a university, you score, say, 280 out of 300, you will not be admitted. They will tell you that the quota for your state has been taken, it's filled up. So you grew up with discrimination from childhood. There was nothing good at all about the country called Nigeria. Therefore, you will see it right before your eyes that Nigeria is intent on killing you as a human being, both physically and spiritually. I challenge anybody, not even the House of Fulani. I even challenge the president himself. President Goodluck Jonathan, I challenge him to say, hand on heart, that he loves Nigeria. Nobody does. Nobody does. Not even the president does.
Are you affiliated with the movement for the actualization of the sovereign state of Biafra or the Biafran Zionist movement?
Yes, we are working together with these various groups. Yes, we are. Especially the commanders of MASOP. Not the leadership, but the commanders of this very MASOP, yes. Because I was once a member of MASOP myself.
And in what capacity are these movements sort of working together in?
It is not something that I'm allowed to air in the public. But deep down, where the eyes cannot see, we are doing something towards making sure that Biafra becomes free. The cooperation is far more deeper and far more defined than we let people actually in on.
South Sudan is living embodiment that problems do not always end with the creation of a new state. What are your thoughts on what's happening there?
At least it's better that brothers and sisters are fighting in the family than outsiders coming in and killing them. As you know, in every family, there's always a teething problem. You have family hiccups. It doesn't mean the end of the world. Britain fought a civil war. England, to be more precise, fought a civil war. And there is nothing wrong with that. Over time, they will come to learn to live with one another. When you've been fighting a war for so many years, people resort to arms as the way to, you know, settle scores and disputes. So it is nothing extraordinary. You must also remember East Timor. There isn't much of a problem there in East Timor. They're living very well. Eritrea is another example. There isn't any war going on there either. Bosnia has a governor. There is no war. In Albania, there is almost semi-autonomous, and also Kosovo as well. No problems. So the issue of South Sudan is very unique. And as you also know, wherever you have oil, there's always a problem.
Is there a plan then, you know, moving beyond the securing of Biafra as a state and a republic of its own, to ensure that its citizens are provided for in a really long-term, consistent way that, you know, all countries really owe their citizens?
That is exactly what we're trying to do, and that is why I came here as well. We have to start now to lay the foundation for very good, civil, orderly, civilized society. And if you begin to value the lives of your people, that means you're laying the right foundations for them. The treatment that our people are getting, Biafrans are getting in Malaysia, I'm afraid to say, is not very good. We are dying here a lot. I don't know if you're aware of that. We are being killed very much in Malaysia. I do not understand why that should be the case, but we are being killed in Malaysia, and that is not very good. So we are starting even right now. Despite the fact that we're scattered all over the world, we are making sure that wherever you have Biafrans, that a semblance of qualitative life does exist among these very people, that when we take them back home, they will learn to inculcate and to develop that in our new society.
What leads Biafrans to our shores here in Malaysia?
Sorry?
What brings Biafrans to our shores here in Malaysia?
Hardship. If you're a Nigerian, if you're born in Nigeria, you will go to places further away from even Malaysia. If you can go and live with the penguins in the ice polar caps, you will go there to live. Anywhere else, nobody in their right mind wants to live in Nigeria. I challenge anybody. Go and try and live there. You will see. No human being. Therefore, we expect the Malaysian government to be a little bit understanding of the fact that no sane human being would want to live in Nigeria. Nigeria is worse than hell if there's anything like that.
And you mentioned earlier, of course, you are the director of Radio Biafra. Could you tell us the work that you do there?
We broadcast to the whole world. We enlighten our people. We bring them news. We give them a platform to discuss our common problems and find solutions to them. We articulate these solutions and we go out and implement them. So that is why right now, all over the world, every evening and every morning, 7 a.m. UK time, 7 p.m., people from all over the world gather around Radio Biafra. Even governments of the world listen to Radio Biafra as well, because they want to understand why we think the way we do, why we want Biafra to be free. And I'm sure that right now they're beginning to grasp it.
For all its woes, Nigeria is Africa's largest economy today. The Biafra region, upon reabsorption, was turned into a relatively prosperous oil-based economy. You know, are there any reasons besides, how does this impact Biafra's economy or, you know, its burgeoning economy to secede from Nigeria?
I don't know which country you've just described. Did you say oil sector? I mean, I can't understand it. There is no, we don't see the oil. Do you people see oil anywhere? No one sees oil. No. This oil is taken over by British mining companies and they take it away. They sell it. They pay Hausa, Fulani people, and they bank the money abroad. That's what happens. There is chronic poverty of the kind you have never seen before in your life. Awful.
So having said that, what then is the message that you'd like to impart in terms of, you know, the people of Biafra? What do you want us to understand about the way of life and the hopes that you have?
What we want the world to understand is that there is need for Biafra, because Biafra represents natural justice, fairness and live and let live. There is a universal concept which I believe is irreducible that we must at all times try to set people free. This is a free society for Malaysians. We are Malaysians, go to school, they study. People like you find a job to come to that you enjoy doing. We don't have that. We also wish to create that. I am not happy. We are not happy that we run away from where we come from, the land of our ancestors, to go to places where we are being killed, where we are being thrown into jail. How many? I'm sure he went somewhere this morning to try and secure the release of somebody who's in jail. We don't want that. We don't like it. And the fact that we carry that green passport called Nigeria, everybody thinks somehow we are criminals, because, of course, and rightfully so, every Nigerian is a criminal unless you declare that you're not one.
Thank you very much. I've been speaking to Namdi Kanu, the director of Radio Biafra and the leader of the indigenous people of Biafra. We've been discussing the legacy of Nigeria's civil war on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.